This is August the 21st. Noyes and Hillman framing a question for the president. Based on an analysis of the character of the American people, following a summation of the process of exploration and the formation of the new republic in the United States. Question, the postal, the character of the American people. Thus, the American people came from tiny beginnings to the establishment of a nation which was to be the most powerful nation in the world, with all the rights and responsibilities such a position demands. By 1789, they had not only become a political entity, but also had developed a character of their own. Because they were mostly farmers, they were preoccupied with practical matters. And from this preoccupation, their acquisitive instinct had grown. They were versatile, being facile in many things rather than thorough in one. Their self-reliance begot individualism, and their belief in democracy was rooted in self-reliant individualism rather than in political or social theory. Along with individualism developed an unattractive national habit of lawlessness, expressed in occasional rioting or in murderous lynchings. The speed with which they overran a potentially rich wilderness, and indeed the very fact that they were courageous enough to uproot themselves from Europe, habituated them to restlessness and nomadic life. To take one's family into wooded acreage in the hope of turning the forest into farms requires that one be an optimist. And the extroverted optimist expressed himself by bragging, while his introverted brother had a fierce idealistic fire which burned to change things for the better. The isolation of Western life begot a provincialism in which was the germ of the sectionalism which almost wrecked the nation in the 1860s, and which, as late as the 1930s, made international isolationism the popular foreign policy of the United States. The vast wealth of the wilds made the Americans the most wasteful farmers and exploiters of resources in recorded history. From all these traits, they grew naturally to favor utility over beauty, practice over theory, doing over thinking, and they became absorbed in the game of being the most industrious people of the world.
All right, Mr. President.
Would you say this was rather involved and at the same time oversimplified way of profiling the American character?
Yes, it was, for the simple reason that the opening of the great and immense resources of land, forest, and mines that was put into effect after the organization of the government of the United States is one of the most interesting things in the history of the country. And the thing that really makes you stand up and take notice is the fact that you find that the people who developed Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and the west beyond the Mississippi River were people who were ambitious for the development of not only their own welfare, but for the development of the country. Now, had there been any idea on the part of the people who were leaving the East to go West to separate from the United States, it could have been done very easily. But when Aaron Burr made his effort to set up an empire in the Southwest, he was completely overthrown and defeated in his effort. And that happened on occasion after occasion. The only difficulty with the whole period of the settlement of the new country of the west of the original 13 colonies came about over the slave question. And when that slave question was settled, there never was any difficulty about the settlement and the development of the states that made up the rest of the Union. And you find that conservation had a part in that settlement. You find that there were forests and parks and things of that kind that were saved for the welfare and benefit of future generations. And the waste of the timber in the South, in Louisiana and in South Missouri and other places, has been rehabilitated by replanting, and sometime in the not too far distant future, we'll have a great many of those forests restored, except those that take long periods to grow. And they've saved a great many of those in the far west. So I think this fellow is a little pessimistic in the way he approaches the thing, because when people find out what's happening to their soils, and they always attempt to rehabilitate them, and it's perfectly feasible to rehabilitate them. It can be done, and has been done, and is being done right now.
In other words, they were not practical realists. They're more or less practical idealists, were they not?
Yes, they've always been practical idealists, and are still the softest-hearted people in the world. And whenever any fellow gets in trouble, serious trouble, there's always a majority of the people want to help him out. And that's still the case. We just have illustrations of it every day. We have a case up here in the north where the mother and father of a whole family were destroyed, and one or two of the family were destroyed. But an effort is being made to keep the rest of the family together and raise them as a family. That happens all the time. I think that the heart and soul of this American population is one of the greatest in the history of the world. How in the world could we have rehabilitated the countries which tried their best to put us out of business had we not had that feeling? That's really what happened after the Second World War.
In other words, we had gone, these people were getting away from a class-conscious society into a humanity-conscious
group. That's exactly right. And they developed the country in a way that, while they ruined some of the resources of the country, they are now being restored by efforts that are perfectly practical and all right. I know from the very fact that a farm can be rehabilitated and made to produce again where it's been completely worn out by people who do not know how to have crop rotation and things of that sort.
Well, Mr. President, this author is referring to the type that went out and spread out. And there were instances of ruthless exploitation.
Yes, I agree with that. And ruthless exploiters usually became multimillionaires, and then their consciences got to hurt them, and they set up foundations to help restore the thing that their fathers had ruined.
In other words, whatever the basic urges of the rush westward and in the development of the land, later generations are beginning to adjust themselves.
Isn't any question about it. In the long run, you'll find that the rehabilitation of those parts of the country that have been wasted by the lack of conservation are now being restored. And in the future generations, I think there'll be enough there to take care of the situation as it is now. For instance, the production of those farms that are left, they've been cutting down the amount of land that's in agriculture. Every time they cut it down, the acreage production increases. And the reason for that is that the people have found out what conservation means. An acre of land now in the Corn Belt that formerly produced 30 and 40 bushels of acres of corn now will produce 160 bushels of acres of corn. Same thing is true. Wheat and oats and all the rest of the production that is for the welfare and benefit of the world. And we've got to find out how to meet that situation so as to feed that part of the world that's starving. And that's one of the plans that was, an attempt was made to work out a plan of that sort during the time that I was president of the United States. And we had a program, but the political situation got into it. They made a lot of demagoguery out of it. And eventually they're going to have to put that into effect. Find out how to use these surplus crops so that nobody in the world will starve, and we can do that. And there's untold lands in the world yet that have never been developed that will produce enough to feed all the population we can possibly produce.
And your feeling is that the American genius, to use that badly used word, could make a great contribution to it because of its own experience.
That's right, and an effort's been made to do that.
Well, but the big point you've made here is that the American people were endowed with a sense of generosity where they not only wanted to share with each other, but when the time came, they wanted to share with other nations.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
Well, did you mean endowed, Dave, or did you mean had to be endowed as some special gift? Did they have a special gift, Mr. President, beyond
exactly
other
that.
People?
Well, the history of the settlement of these Western territories will show you that the situation was such that everybody helped everybody else. The most prosperous man in the neighborhood was just as anxious to help the poor man as the poor man was to be helped. And it finally wound up so that what we have is a development of that urge to live and let live. And that's what we finally put into effect internationally. Nothing like that has ever been done in the history of the world by conquering a nation that's victorious in a war. What we did for the rehabilitation of free Europe and for the rehabilitation of Japan and all the rest of the world where they would let us do it.
That's very important, Mr. President. This theme is probably one of the most important themes of recent American history.
We shall need to develop it some more. Had we been able to transmit that idealism, having come from other lands, had we been able to retransmit this urge to the mother countries?
Well, I think we have. When the man who's in charge of Libya, an Arab, wants to go along for the rehabilitation of the Congo, you know we've made some effect on it.
That's right. Now, what about the parliamentary system, we started to talk about party system that had developed in this
I'm
country?
I'm sorry, Dave, may I interrupt, because I'd like to get your notions of quaint idea that the American people, because of their experience, were more interested in utility than beauty.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all. I think they were interested in both utility and beauty, and they're parallel and go along together. A real utility can be made a beautiful thing, and it has been done in this country.
Certainly proved in your case when you had to build a county courthouse. You went out and looked for the best architectural firm that would give you both utility and beauty, and you got
yes,
both.
Well, that's what I want to get the President's feeling about that, because this is a very common charge against the Americans that they're so concerned with the business that they're not there. They don't pay any attention
to this. I don't think that's true at all.
Yeah, when
I
you
don't
build the country roads, when you build the country roads, you consider to put out trees on both sides of the road in
yes,
order
I'm
to
talking
get
about
some
the
beauty.
American people, not
but he's the American. Well, I'm trying to get to the point. He was expressing the American people here.
This is the end of tape 5, August 22nd. This is tape number 6, August 22nd. All right, Mr. President, or did you want to ask a question?
Well, I think we're in the business here of trying to draw some kind of an image of the American personality as it evolved in the new environment. You were defining them as being generous, kindly, neighborly, and the last thing you said was we finally came to a point where we not only we're getting along, but we wanted to work out a policy of live and let live, which brought it up to your administration.
Right.
Hold it, Bill, a minute, will you?
Yeah. All right now, Mr. President, you can...
That's a continuation of the conversation we've been having on the subject that I have, as I said before, come to the conclusion that the people who made up the settlement of the West, this side of the Appalachian Mountains and all the way to the Pacific Coast, were people who were trying their best to get along. And they were the best neighbors in the world. They helped each other. They tried every way in the world to make it possible for everybody to make good. Those who were prosperous were willing to help those who were not prosperous and did help them in various and many instances. And I think that developed an idea among the people of the whole United States, even including those east of the Appalachian Mountains, and I'm being liberal when I say that, to understand that the idea of the people of America was to live and to let live. And that was amply demonstrated after the Second World War, when we were perfectly willing to spend immense sums of money for the rehabilitation of destroyed, the part of Europe that had been destroyed by the Nazis and Mussolini, and to also do the same thing for Japan, which had been destroyed as a result of the Second World War. And those countries have been rehabilitated on the same basis that the neighbors of the early settlements of the West in the United States helped each other.
Well, now, how is it that we have come to be plagued with such terms as the ugly American?
Oh, well, whenever you help a man and he becomes prosperous, he always knows that he did it himself and that you had nothing to do with it, so don't let that worry you. That'll wear off.
All right, but we do have some pretty bad examples of the American tourist who has been aggressive.
Those are not the pioneers that I'm talking about. Those are the ones who have gotten rich incidentally because the country's prosperous, and they know nothing about the history of the United States. They, you know, the biggest fool in the world is a new rich if he hasn't earned it himself. A great many of them inherited. And those are the people you're talking about. They do not represent the American people as they are at home.
Now, you still draw a distinction as between the individual American and the collective American.
That's right. The collective American is all right, and the vast majority is of the collective American type. There are only a few of those ugly Americans that fellow wrote a book about, and I wish somebody had burned the book up before it was published, because it doesn't do us any good.
And actually, the title does not bear out the content anyway.
Not at all. No, it doesn't.
Mr. President, there is this problem of the American personality that is being constantly misused and abused and propagandized about by the conflicting ideology, the so-called communist movement, now to project us in the role of being inquisitive, imperialistically minded, and quite different from what you have just described the American personality.
Well, the best answer to that is the fact that as a result of the war with Spain in 1898, Puerto Rico, and Cuba, the Philippine Islands all became a part of the United States. The first thing we did was to try to establish governments and educate those people for the establishment of governments that would be their own. We set up the Republic of the Philippines, we set up the Republic of Cuba, and we've instituted a practical commonwealth in Puerto Rico, which is a government of their own, where they elect their governor and their legislature and transact their own business, yet they're a part of the United States. That is the best example that I know to show you exactly how the American people felt. And this all happened at least 60 years ago, and it's still in effect. Although we have now a demagogue in Cuba who is trying to bite the hand that's always kept the Cuban Republic in existence. Our other southern neighbors in Central America, in Mexico, and in all the rest of South America, I might say, are not in that same frame of mind. They all believe that we are their friends, that we want to be their friends, and that we are their friends. Take the situation north of us. Take Canada. There's an unguarded border from Lake Superior to the Pacific Ocean. No one has ever had any trouble over that border or the people on either side of it. That's also true of the eastern part of Canada. They're our friends. They know that we have no ambition to do anything to them that would in any way injure their welfare and benefit. In fact, their prosperity means our prosperity, and that's true of all the Western Hemisphere. And if they let this Khrushchev come in here with a little demagogue down in Cuba and stir up trouble with our friends, why, that's because we haven't got the right people to carry on our own foreign policies.
Well, isn't it a case where they're able to convince that's enough of the Cuban people that Uncle Sam is really the exploiter?
We may have had some exploiters in Cuba. You take these old birds who exploited their own country. They have decided that they'd go and see where these tremendous resources are. You'll always find some of those people in control of things. But If we had the right sort of representation in our own government in Cuba, that couldn't happen. And I don't think that the industries which have been taken over by the Cuban government were doing anything but employing the people of Cuba so they'd have something to eat and a place to live, which they didn't have before.
Well, but there must be something wrong when the traditional friends of the United States, China and Russia, are able to turn around and bill us as the villains of the world today, as the warmongers, etc.
But the China and Russia that we had to deal with, there are different China and Russia than what we have now. It's not the same thing at all. In the original arrangement, the Russian friendship to us and our purchase of Alaska and the removal of the Russians from the west coast of the North American continent was due to the fact that Russia was an enemy of Great Britain at that time and was making maneuvers with a country that government in Russia thought would be a thorn in the side of the British. Now, we did do our best to help China. We sent immense amounts of money, we sent immense amounts of equipment to China, but the people with whom we were doing business in China were not, did not have the right attitude toward their own people. In fact, the communists in China used the equipment which we sent to Free China to run the head of the government of Free China out of China by making a surrender of 5 million people to some 300,000 communists. And they used the equipment which we sent for the use of the Free Chinese to chase the Free Chinese out of China. I don't know how you're going to help a thing of that kind, because we couldn't send a million men over there to save it.
Well, going back, this is somewhere around 1900 when we not only involved ourselves in the adjustment after the Boxer Rebellion, but then we got reparations of something like 25 million, and we used those reparations.
We gave those reparations back to China. But you must remember also,
we arranged for students, didn't we?
In the Japanese-Russian War, we were on the side of the Japanese.
Only because we...
we thought the Japanese were better than Russians at that time.
We helped them out, we didn't do it, but the Japanese were through anyway at that time, were they
What's
not?
What's the point you're making, Dave? I don't get the point you're making about...
The point we're making is that we are having trouble with our former friends.
Oh, yes, that's true, but I don't know how you have prevented
and
that.
And they've succeeded in billing us to the rest of the world as being people with yes, with acquisitive
instincts. I don't think that'll stand.
Well, we've got the point of
that. They're different people.
Well, that's right. Well, that's the point.
It's a different proposition entirely, situation, I think, eventually it'll work itself out, because with the rehabilitated Japan, I think that we have a friend in Japan, we have a friend in the Philippines, and eventually, if things work out, we should have friends in Indonesia. We know we have. Eventually, when these people begin to, really functions has been to discredit us before the whole world, after we saved them, the Russians still owe us $6,600,000,000 in interest, foreign dollars in interest. Hitler would have taken Moscow and Leningrad too.
Saying that we were only trying to save our own skin by doing that.
We were
here.
Trying to save Russia.
Whether you have any thoughts on how we can help hasten an offset to this propaganda, or how can we make ourselves understood a little bit better, a little bit clearer?
I really don't know. We are not built on the basis where we like to tell a big lie and keep telling a big lie hoping somebody will believe it. We try to give people the right impression as to what we really are. It's the objective of the Chinese and the Russians at the present time under their present governments never to tell the truth. The objective is to make the big lie stand up, and that's what is known as propaganda, and I don't believe in it.
All right, now, what does a president do under these circumstances? Here's a president who went around the world, or part of the world, trying to make an impression of our benign attitude. Didn't last, didn't succeed.
I don't know. I really don't know. The situation was developed during the 20 years that the Democrats were in control of the White House, because we helped save the We helped Russia, as I say, by $6.6 billion, which they never settled for. And we've tried to help all these countries in South America, and have, to a very great extent, been of great help to them in their development. And I don't know how in the world you can go about a thing when you've got a propaganda machine in the form of the Russians and the Chinese that doesn't care anything in the world for the truth or the facts in settling a case. You can make anybody appear as a no good, no count man if you lie about him enough, and that's what they've done to us. I don't know how you're going to overcome it, except just to go ahead and do the right things we always have done.
Yet you had considerable success with it yourself when you were president.
Well, yes, but the situation was a little bit different then. We had been working on that proposition. Roosevelt had been working on it for 12 years, and I continued it for 8 years more, and it had its effects. But you see, when special privilege and special interests get control of the finances of the country, then you have difficulty, and that's one of the things that's caused our troubles.
Well, then, in effect, you're saying that how we head up and administer this government has a lot to do with how it's understood in other places.
Isn't any question about that? Isn't any question about that?
I'm afraid that's the end of tape six of the 22nd.